How to Talk So Little Kids Will Listen, a survival guide to life with children ages 2 to 7, written by Joanna Faber and Julie King. It's kind of a follow-up or a sequel to How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk. Joanna's mother was the one involved in that book, and you're childhood friends with Joanna, so you've kind of grown up with this kind of mentality, I guess, of talking and listening to kids. Julie, why the need to sort of get to a specific age and do a book like this? Was the other book not complete enough?
You know, I've been teaching from that other book for many years, and for quite a few years working with parents of little kids who said to me, we need more stories and more examples. The tools are great, but we keep coming across situations where we just need new ideas and fresh ideas how to get our kids to brush their teeth or wash their hands or get in the car seat. And they were begging me for more stories. And I actually called Adele years ago and I said, I have your next book, Adele. It's How to Talk So Little Kids Will Listen. And she said, oh, Julie, I'm too tired. You write it. So I called my friend Joanna and I said, we have to write this book.
In this part of here, there's a little bit of a disclaimer. It says, all the stories told by characters in our book actually happened. Names and other identifying details have been changed, but in all cases, real-life children and real-life parents and professionals really did say and do these things. So there's quite a bit of authenticity in this book, for sure.
That's right. We've been leading these workshops and collecting stories for many years, and we also use the stories from our own families. Joanna has three kids, and as do I. So we have our stories sprinkled throughout the book as well.
Now, have kids evolved in a way over time, or is it pretty much basically a lot of the same issues that people have been dealing with?
You know, it's the same issues apply to new situations. So when we were raising our kids, we didn't have the problem of iPads and cell phones that little kids want to play with. But we had remote controls and other DVD players and other things that the kids wanted to play with that they could get into trouble with. So some of the specifics have changed, and I think that this current generation of parents are also dealing with even more demands on their time. We've got more to working parents and families who have so little time to spend with their kids, and they're constantly having to get their kids quickly out in the morning, and there's more activities. But the basic principles have remained the same, and the tools that we've offered give parents a way to connect with their kids, to get cooperation from their kids, and these kinds of issues, these are sort of, you know, these perennial issues that parents deal with when they're raising their kids.
Well, let's talk with sort of a day in the life of a child. You get the morning started. Everybody wants to start the day. You make it a good day kind of a thing, but disasters can happen at any moment. Get us going in the morning. What are some of the things we can keep in mind when we're starting our day so we can, as they say, get off on the right foot?
Well, it's important to remember that we have a sense of time in the morning, that we have that sense of we need to get out in time, we feel rushed. Kids don't have that same sense of time. You know, they wander around, they look, pick up a piece of dust. Oh, that's interesting. They don't have, they're not as goal-oriented as we are, and I'm especially talking about little kids now. So when we have to get them out the door in a rush, we have to remember that our most effective way to get them to do something we want them to do is to make it engaging, to be playful. So when we're trying to get them to get dressed, for example, instead of saying, now it's time to get your shoes on, we're in a rush, hurry up, go get them, it can be much more effective to use a playful voice and say, Elise, this is your shoe talking. I feel so lonely and empty. Won't you put your feet in me? Elise, listen, did you hear that? Your shoes are talking to you. Most kids just cannot resist that kind of playfulness, and they run off and get their shoes and stick their feet in. Much more effective way than scolding them or threatening them.
So interact with them and kind of make it fun and allow them to sort of experience something new just during mundane tasks as we were trying to get them ready.
That's right. And I just need to add that sometimes parents say to me, "Oh, I can't make everything a game. You know, this is how long is this going to go on?"
Right. I only have so many voices I can come up with here.
Yeah, that's right. And we can't do this all the time. It's not realistic. But what I find is when parents get ideas, when they share their ideas with each other, you know, I had a mom in one of my very first groups who did fantastic voices. She could do a Donald Duck. And she would get her kids picking up their backpacks and getting out the door because Donald Duck would tell them, you know, it's, and I can't do it. So I can't do a Donald Duck. So I stole her idea, but I, instead of doing Donald Duck, I tried out a British accent, which I have to tell you, I don't do accents, but my kids were little, they didn't know the difference.
Right.
But when I said, excuse me, it is time to go, won't you get your backpack? And they looked at me and they said, Mom, why are you talking so funny? Funny? I'm not talking funny. I'm just trying to tell you about your backpack. Won't you go get it? And suddenly they're playing with me, and they're running around getting their things, and it changes the mood. Anytime we can do that, instead of ordering our kids around, you know, it may be exhausting by the end of the morning, but at least we're off in a good mood. We have a good spirit when we finally get out the door.
We're talking this morning to Julie King. She's the co-author of the book, How to Talk So Little Kids Will Listen. A lot of times we're also taking kids out to the real world. They have to interact with people, or they have to be out there. We go to the store shopping, and that's another one of those. We're trying to get a task done. I've always heard about engaging them, allowing them to kind of help you do the shopping. What other tips can you have so that going to the grocery store or doing shopping in general can also be something that is not as exhausting as it could be?
Going to the grocery store can be a nightmare, especially if you're going at the end of the day, you're hungry, your kid's hungry. So we have a whole chapter on just shopping with children in our book, because it's such a challenge, and it's something we have to do every day. So yes, I mean, putting the child in charge, giving them something to do, instead of telling them, be quiet, sit still, get in the cart, you know, hold on. If we can give them, I used to give my kids a task. I'd ask one of my kids to hold the bags and hand out the bags as we collect the produce, and somebody else was in charge of keeping track of the list and crossing off the items on the list. And the other thing I used to tell my kids is, when we go in the grocery store, you know, the grocery store, they sometimes try to make us want to buy things that we don't really need, but we're going to bring our list in, and we're going to stick to what we really need. We're not going to get tricked by the displays of colorful cereal boxes of things we don't need. So that really helped, because the grocery store, it's an overstimulating place, and they do try to get us to buy things. And it's too easy to get into a fight with our kids. No, we're not going to buy that. We don't need that. Oh, please, Mommy. So if we can avoid that kind of argument in the grocery store, we're all happier.
You have co-authored this with Joanna. You've known her since childhood, though. How are your parenting styles different? I mean, no two people parent the same way. When you're putting a book like this together, did you come up with some conflicting ideas, or at least ones that coming from a different angle that kind of enlightened you as well?
You know, I would say that we use the same basic principles, that how, you know, where we decide to draw the line on one thing or another, how many pieces of candy, or whether it's really important to wash your hands before every single meal. You know, we have different rules, whether you can eat in the living room or not. I'm not going to tell you which way each of us goes, but but in terms of the basic principles, we really do both believe that kids really want to be understood. They want us to acknowledge what they're going through. They want to have a say in what we do and what they do. So the basic principles we really do see eye to eye.
What about when you're you have one child, or your child and a neighbor's child? Try not to compare them, but wonder whether your child is developing at the same rate. You're talking about 2 to 7-year-olds, so there's a lot of change that's going on through a lot of that time. How do you deal with those issues, or what words of advice do you have for that?
Well, no, that's interesting that you bring that up, because we have a whole chapter in our book for kids who are wired differently. And we primarily are talking about kids who have either sensory processing disorder or autism spectrum disorder. I have a child who has an Asperger's diagnosis, which is now considered an autism spectrum disorder. So I have a lot of experience with the idea that it's not helpful to compare your child to other children. My child developed at a different pace than other kids, and I wouldn't want to see him as wrong or different. I mean, he did what he could do. Mm-hmm. And it's very challenging when you have a child who doesn't follow the normal developmental pattern to know what to expect. It's a real challenge. It was a challenge for me. It's a challenge for the parents I work with. We really have to tune into what we know about our own child and imagine what it is that they're experiencing and watch what they're able to do and not to compare them to other children, because then they're just going to feel less than, and we're going to feel frustrated.
How long did it take you to kind of get in tune with your child then in a case like that?
You know, I could tell there was something different from the day he was born. So, it was a matter of learning how did he respond to different situations. He would shut down when there was too much stimulation. But well before he got his diagnosis, I knew that he didn't do well in large crowds. He didn't do well with lots of people in a loud space or lots of lights. So intuitively, I kept him. I would take him out of those kinds of situations. I could tell that it was too much for him. So, every child is different. Whether you have a child with a diagnosis or not, every child is different, and it's really important. You know, you'll read a lot. People say, trust your gut. But in this situation, I think it's true. You need to trust yourself that your child may be having an experience, even though you're parenting in the exact same way, in the exact same situation as another child. They're different.
On a separate level, sometimes kids will come up with odd habits or doing things or wearing certain clothes, or they find something they're obsessed with. How long do we deal with that sort of thing?
Well, you know, you've heard the expression, pick your battles. Right. If it's a matter of they're wearing mismatched clothes, hey, they like it, they put it together, unless you're going to the Queen's breakfast, let's them choose their own clothes. Let's pick our battles. If they're wearing clothes that are unsafe or inappropriate for the weather, I think that's one thing. But, you know, I've had a lot of parents who say, well, we walked into school today and the teacher said, it looks like you picked out your clothes all by yourself.
Again, the book is called How to Talk So Little Kids Will Listen. This is for a survival guide to life with children ages 2 to 7. Joanna Faber and also Julie King. We've been speaking with Julie this morning about this book. We appreciate your time. If people want to find out more about this book or other things that will help them with parenting, where's a good place for them to get some resources?
Well, the book, we have a book website, howtotalksolittlekidswilllisten.com, and they can actually read more stories. We've got a blog going, and they can purchase the book in hardcover, paperback, audio, ebook, all available online. And if they want to learn more about my services, I work individually with parents as well as offering workshops, they can go to my website, which is julieking.org.